Tonight on the Saturday Night Special, we are doing what we always do, taking what seems like a simple and straightforward topic and looking at it from many angles and invariably realizing how the given topic of the night is perhaps far more nuanced than we originally thought. And tonight's topic, given the release of the new Wonder Woman movie, is comics. But before we think this topic a light one, think again. While on the surface, it may appear to be all about crime-fighting wearers of capes and tights, comics are both more socially and politically radical than you might think, and far more sophisticated. Indeed, underneath pages of speeding bullets, super tensile webs, and a man who dresses as a bat, comics represent and address a variety of social ills, imagined revolutions, power shifts, and as the expression goes, good triumphing over evil. Through comic books, we tackle our greatest fears, both external and internal, reflecting a more just version of our world as a social mirror, however implausible such a utopia may seem from the present. Just as Superman was a thinly veiled response to fascism in the 1930s, and zombies a response to hyper-consumerism in the 70s, and Wonder Woman in response to the patriarchy since, well, forever, all heroes are really just the versions of ourselves we wish that we could be. To be super strong, to make people tell the truth, and to make justice prevail. But comics aren't all about being super. Contemporary work reveals a pantheon of ordinary people doing everyday stuff and overcoming a range of things from romantic angst to coping with annoying customers. But these characters are heroes all the same. As iconic comics are made into films, comic book culture, once very subculture, is mainstream. The industry, a just over $1 billion one as of this time last year, has grown and adapted into new platforms, new models, and new styles to rise to meet the modern consumer. Tonight, we'll look at this industry, why it resonates with us in a given time, and how that time shows us what we value and fear. And we'll talk to a few who know it best. I'm Amy Guth, and that's all coming up tonight on the Saturday Night Special on 720 WGN.
Live from the biggest small town in America,
this is WGN Chicago, radio home of millions throughout mid-America.
Radio, well, radio became the Pied Piper to a strange new world.
Up on our big shoulders and get inside our massive heart.
This is the Saturday Night Special with Amy Guth.
720 WGN, you heard the woman. This is the Saturday Night Special. I'm Amy Guth, and tonight we are talking about comics. Indeed, the unassuming comic book is filled, in fact, filled with commentary on class, race, gender, oppression, and even just the daily angst of our lives. We'll be talking with those who know the industry best, who create the stories that we read, who create the places in which we read them, and who give us context as those stories move from page to screen to bigger screen. We'll be talking with Katie Reif, film critic at the AV Club, and Gordon McAlpin, creator of the Multiplex webcomic series, and talking with Eisner Award-winning celebrated writers, power couple Kelly Sue DeConnick and Matt Fraction, and also owner of Third Coast Comics right here in Chicago, Terry Gant, will be with us in studio all night, providing his expertise to our conversation. So we'll be right back to get that conversation underway right here on 720 WGN.
Get away to Indiana and explore Columbus, a city world-renowned for its mid-century modernist architecture. Win an overnight stay, restaurant gift certificate, and a guided tour to see notable buildings. Sponsored by Indiana Office of Tourism Development. Enter at WGNradio.com/contests.
Tom, what do you like best about this job?
I like to see the look on people's faces when they see the difference we made.
Describe that difference.
We make places feel big.
And clean.
We give people a fresh start.
A do-over.
A brand new day.
With birds singing and everything.
And what do we say to people?
All you have to do is point.
And whatever you're pointing at will disappear.
We work until midnight,
7 days a week,
so you never have to take off work to meet us.
We can usually be there in about 90 minutes.
Call 1-800-GOT-JUNK
or visit 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com.
Rich Lenkoff, Jason Whiteside, two sides of legal face-off.
Pop culture, entertainment, sports, politics. When athletes have concussions, when billionaires are going through a divorce, they hire lawyers. And on Legal Face-Off, we're going to give you the explanation of that and also do it in a light way, in a fun way.
Legal Face-Off, the show that features two competing attorneys slugging it out over today's hottest topics.
And I think having the legal background that we do, having the legal education that we do, allows us to cut through.
Download the podcast now at WGNplus.com.
Policies issued by American General Life Insurance Company, Houston, Texas. Not available in all states. For details, visit AIGDirect.com.
If you're young and healthy, you don't need life insurance, right? Yeah, that's what I used to think, too, until my brother died at 38. Joe left his wife with two kids, a mortgage, and a stack of bills she couldn't pay. Mary had to sell the house and move everybody into this tiny two-bedroom apartment just to make ends meet. I never want to do that to my wife, so I got life insurance. I called AIG Direct and was really surprised how affordable it is. Just $14 a month for $250,000 of term life coverage. Listen, if you have a family, you should seriously think about getting life insurance. You'll feel a lot better having it. Trust me.
Call AIG Direct for a free, no-obligation quote. The call takes less than 5 minutes, and you could save up to 70%. Call now, 1-800-985-4226. That's 1-800-985-4226. 1-800-985-4226.
CLTV is now in HD. Watch the TV simulcasts of Steve Cochran and Rokan, along with all the latest news, weather, and traffic, all in high definition, now on Comcast Xfinity Channel 352. WGN 720. It's Amy Guth, and this is the Saturday Night Special. I think I've waited my entire radio career to play that music right there as bump music. Very, very exciting that right now we are playing the Wonder Woman theme song. I carried around that metal lunchbox, that is for sure. So tonight, on the heels of the release of the new Wonder Woman movie, we are talking all about comics. Not only the comic publications, but the icons in them, the industry itself. We'll be talking with a lot of people who are doing work in that space. All night long, we are so fortunate. We have our good friend Terry Gant in studio with us. He is owner of Third Coast Comics right here in Chicago. He's also, I have described him many times on this program, as a human encyclopedia of comics knowledge. Lovely to have you back, Terry.
Thank you, Amy. Hello, Radioland.
Radioland. Love that. We've said Radioland, and we've got the Wonder Woman theme song happening. This show is off to a fine start. Well, so speaking of that Wonder Woman movie, Terry, I know you have seen it. I have not yet seen it. I feel like I've built it up now. I need. It needs to be an event in my life.
It should be.
Yeah. What,
tomorrow morning.
Okay.
Go.
Okay. I'll get right on that. Well, we are joined now by phone with our good friend Katie Reif. She has also been on this program many times. She is a film critic at AV Club. You have read her work many times, and she has brought us many, many great hits and wonderful advice. I still refer often to the list that you gave us around Halloween time of these wonderful independent horror films. So I wholly trust all of your film takes for us. But so how do you feel about the Wonder Woman movie?
Hi. I think the Wonder Woman I'm pretty excited about it because it is a really significant event, not just in the sense for like women starring in superhero movies, because there's only been a small handful of them over the years. There was Supergirl, there was Elektra, there's been a small handful of them, but not very many. But this one is also, it's the first one to also have a female hero and be directed by a woman, mm-hmm. directed by Patty Jenkins, who made Monster, the movie where Charlize Theron won her Oscar. And so it's only the second movie ever directed by a woman to cost more than $100 million. That's pretty big deal.
I like that data very much because that's another topic we've talked a lot about on this show of just how underrepresented women are in Hollywood. So mm-hmm. this is a big deal, and to have to be doing a project this size too is huge. Now I can't talk about this movie though without bringing up this interesting thing that Austin, like all this narrative spun around Austin. So there's an Austin, Texas movie theater that decided, hey, we're going to do a women's only screening of Wonder Woman, mm-hmm. which I think seems fair, that one single showing of this very important moment in the film world could just let women just let us just do our thing in the theater.
Yes.
However, that is not quite how it went. And a lot of people, particularly men, were quite upset about it.
Mm-hmm.
The part that I thought was really fascinating was that there was a man who wrote it this open letter saying, you know, we should all boycott this theater and it's sexist and it's wrong and all this. The mayor of Austin wrote such a funny takedown of this guy.
Yeah. The mayor of Austin basically responded by saying, hi, friend. It appears that someone hacked into your email and sent me a sexist complaint about Wonder Woman. And I just wanted to let you know, because you wouldn't want people to think you're that ignorant, would you?
I love it. I love it. And he closes so perfectly. He's like, and, you know, when you've solved this email problem of yours, which I'm sure you will do promptly, and restore access to your account, know that you're welcome in Austin. And people who would say such a terrible thing are not. And which I thought was so beautiful.
Yeah. Killer.
You know, it's really just unfortunate that it really doesn't make sense that, you know, DC would make this gigantic movie and then only show it, you know, five times at one theater chain.
Right.
which of course is not the case. There are dozens of theaters in Chicago alone showing it hundreds of times a day today. And this is just a small number of screenings where women can get together. And there's never been a big screen Wonder Woman movie. The character's been around for 80 years. So you have people who grew mm-hmm. up their whole lives loving Wonder Woman and have never seen the movie before. And it was just a space to enjoy that in the company of other, you know, female fans. But, you know, I don't know. It just seems really kind of petty to ruin that for people, you know, to spoil the fun.
Yeah, yeah, indeed. And I mean, I agree with you that I think it's an interesting kind of moment culturally that, mm-hmm. that I think it's perfectly fine to have one or two screenings just for women, because I don't,
yeah.
I had the little metal lunchbox. I watched it so much. I loved both Wonder Woman and Diana Prince. I was like, mm-hmm. I'll be either one of them, whichever, it doesn't really matter. And I mean, I haven't seen it yet, but I just feel like when I go to see it, younger me, who so very much loved watching the television series back in the day, is just going to, every part of me, both young me and current me, I don't want to say old me, I'm going to say current me, will love that very much. And that's very exciting. And, you know, another thing, Katie, I don't know if you've noticed this too, but on particularly Instagram, I've seen so many women of so many different ages posing with the poster and with Wonder Woman props. And I mean, this morning alone, my Instagram was filled with women that I know mm-hmm. at Wonder Woman screenings, doing like with lassos and with shields and mm-hmm. all this cool stuff that I can't remember that many women doing anything like that with props and stuff going to a movie.
Yeah, it is really unprecedented in the sense that she's the one hero of the movie. You know, when The Force Awakens came out, that was pretty significant in the character of Rey. But, you know, Rey is just one of the leads in that movie, and Wonder Woman is the main lead. This is really an unprecedented superhero blockbuster event. And I went and saw the movie this afternoon, and there were a couple little girls there wearing Wonder Woman T-shirts. And it just really, you know, I don't know, it warms my heart. I really enjoy it.
Yeah, I too have seen, I'm sitting here in the Showcase studio on Michigan Avenue, I've seen lots of Wonder Woman stuff going by as the day has gone, for sure. And so,
yeah.
You know, I tend to believe, and Terry definitely weigh in on this too, that I tend to believe that there's always, if a comics character of any kind is resonating deeply in a widespread way, there's always some kind of cultural reflection. How much would you, I would ask you both this question, Katie and Terry, how much would you put stock in the success of Wonder Woman on just kind of the cultural moment that we're in, as we're having a lot of conversations right now about sexism and classism and all of these things, and things are mm-hmm. so highly politicized?
All right. You want to go first, Katie?
Go ahead. I'll go to
somebody. I'm dying for the answer.
I find it really interesting that now there's actually pressure on a studio or three or four to do something they've been trying to avoid doing since film was created. You know,
mm-hmm.
like the up before this point, it's like the highest grossing female lead, female focused, like genre movie was Aliens.
in 1986.
Yeah.
Right. So it's taken since 1986. How many times has a studio had a shot at doing something like this and basically said, okay, what's Kurt Russell doing right now? Right. They've done that constantly. And here it's like somebody spent $100 million to make a movie, and you just know in a boardroom somewhere someone was hoping, man, what if it rains that day and nobody goes? Then we're out, right? We can go back to business as usual. And now you can't put it back in the bottle. Wonder Woman worked, you know?
It did work, and it is poised to be really successful this weekend. I know you like numbers, Amy, so I have another number for you. So the estimate is $100 million for Wonder Woman this opening weekend, and if it does meet that, it will be more than all of the other female-led superhero movies from the 80s until now, box office combined.
I just got a little bit of goosebumps going on with that number.
Yeah.
That's quite a thing. And I think that is so fascinating. I would love to see something like that, some record like that to happen. I think that would be phenomenally cool. Mm-hmm. I also think we have to pause and kind of look at how the dominant structure that we usually see, at least in American films, of wide appeal is so flipped in this one. I mean, the damsel in distress is a dude.
Right.
We have to acknowledge that. It's just something we don't see done, or when we see it tried, it's joking the joke too far, and it plays itself out before we get to
it. Or it needs Disney to do it, right? Like it's the fierce princess and she's saving the bumbling prince. You know, like that's the way that usually works.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Wonder Woman, having seen the film, you know, Steve, he's a character in it, but he doesn't dictate her mission. You know, he's following her. Like, she's very focused on her mission the whole time, and you know, he gets the ball rolling, but he's not dictating the terms of the of the narrative. She is. It's fully led by her, which is something different.
The moment he understands what she's supposed to be doing, he spends the movie getting out of her way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty much.
I have no problem with that.
He goes to great lengths to not be in the way.
I have no problem with that whatsoever. I also think that it's so interesting as we think of the things we associate with Wonder Woman in this moment in which we are talking so much about fake news and real news is being called fake news, that here is this lasso of truth. I just think that is so powerful right now when we are talking so much about truth and lies and facts and real news and fake news and all that, that here's this beautiful golden lasso of truth.
And the way I love the way like the lasso is portrayed even in the movie. It's not like the movie did a lot to sort of bridge what people would think of as the campy aspects of like comic book culture with kind of a harder hitting sort of like modern kind of take on it, right? And the way the lasso, you haven't seen it yet, so when you see it, the way the lasso is portrayed is phenomenal. It's really great. Like, not even like, of course they make it like a super weapon, but before, just the truth part it works really well.
Just the truth part.
Yeah. Just the truth part. Just getting to the truth part.
And the theme of the movie is, you know, also kind of interesting looking at the time that we're in now, where she starts off with a really simplistic mission and worldview and point of view that there's good and there's evil, and you know, and but when she comes to our human world, she finds out that things are much more complex than that. So,
well, I can buy that story sure.
It's not fake news at all.
Right. Oh, I didn't realize it was a documentary.
Right. Shot in real time.
Yeah.
So, because this film seems like such an event, and people are. Particularly women are really kind of making a production of going to it. Do you think that this is going to be one that sparks a lot of kind of secondary beats? And I don't necessarily mean like an extended run. I mean, I know the think pieces have already started. So far, no one has written too hot a take that it's a bad cliche. I think most of them have been pretty thoughtful.
There's one piece that I read where somebody was going so far out of their way to pan it that you had to wonder if they'd watched it, you know? And then that generated a parody of that piece.
Oh,
all in the same day.
They dove deeply to pan it and rip it up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, sometimes I think that snark and discontent is so much the default language of the internet. Right. That you kind of
sure.
It's like intellectual currency that you yeah. that in order for your take to be smart one, it has to be bitingly critical and personal attacks and things right. like that attached to it for it to have intellectual weight, which I think is nonsense.
If and film critics, bring it, oh,
go ahead, Katie.
I'm sorry. Oh, I was going to say to bring it back to the Alamo screenings and the men complaining about it. Most of them don't even live in Austin. You know, they're not affected by this. They are doing it at other Alamo draft houses around the country, but it's still, you know, a small handful of screenings. And if you look at it in context, the Alamo does kind of themed screenings all the time. They have an annual event where they watch Jaws on a lake. You know, this is kind of par for the course for them. They like to do big events. And the guys coming in, they're just trolling it. You know, they just want to spoil it.
It's not
like it really affects their lives deeply in any way. They just want to troll it. They want to ruin it. And I think that's a kind of a knee-jerk reaction that people have online a lot. That's really
sure
not fun.
Well, plus, if it was like a dudes only screening, there'd be so many skipped seats.
If there were a dudes only screening, we would just have what the last 75 years of action movies. Right?
Yeah,
it's almost
much.
An accident. There's a woman in half the things that get like announced to come out between yeah. the months of April and November.
Sure, you know? Absolutely.
It's pure accident.
I feel like there have been many unannounced and unintentional dude only screenings.
Right.
Like, let this one be.
Right.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, especially, you know, things have changed a lot over the past decade or so, I think, of fan culture. But, you know, 20, 30 years ago, there were probably some accidentally male-only Comic-Cons, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. And now we have where we have Comic-Cons that have harassment policies, that have, mm-hmm. You know, policies and stated goals for diversity and inclusion. And definitely a long way that we have come in that regard, for sure.
And some of those are so new to them that they're still bumbling through that, you know, like that they have to think about these things and have it in writing. How do you enforce it? That some of them are still not good at doing this very simple kind mm-hmm. of thing.
Right. So the idea of... The idea of like one screening, I don't think will kill anybody. No. Sorry, Katie, go ahead.
No. Oh, I was going to say, I think that maybe, you know, the growing female presence at cons and yeah. in sort of superhero fandom may have maybe influencing the major movie studios to start making more of these things. You know, as more women speak out as vocal fans of these characters, I mean, they see a money-making opportunity. So.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, a little bit later, we're going to be talking about the future Captain Marvel movie. So more to come on that good
just
stuff.
Just thinking about that.
Yeah, more to come on that. Katie Reif, thanks so much for being with us. Always a pleasure to have you and your film knowledge in the studio with us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right. We are going to take a little break and get you to news, all that good stuff. It's a Saturday Night Special with Amy Guth. And tonight, our good friend Terry Gant, owner of Third Coast Comics, is with us hanging out all night as we are taking on this big topic of comics. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN. WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Saturday Night Special. And tonight, as ever, we're picking one big old topic and talking about different parts of it all night. And that topic this evening is comics, because a lot of people are talking about the release of the new Wonder Woman film, a little bit of controversy happening around that over a women's only screening. In fact, there were people protesting that movie before it was even out. Some men's groups were super mad about that even existing. So that is the topic that we were talking about tonight. We were just talking with Katie Reif from the AV Club. She's a film critic there, talking a little bit about the Wonder Woman film and Wonder Woman as an icon and all the things she stands for. All night in studio with us is regular contributor to this program. That's Terry Gant. He's the owner of Third Coast Comics in the Edgewater neighborhood of Chicago, which is a fine, fine establishment. And I recommend that you all go up there because he's got a little bit of everything. Welcome back to the show, Terry. So glad to have you in studio with us tonight.
All right.
All right, he says, ready to roll.
Let's do this.
Well, there are so many topics when we think about comics. I think maybe to the uninitiated, it's sort of a little bit of it's a kid stuff. It's a comic book. It's a, you know, an easy to put down little lighthearted thing. But it, as we were saying in the opening of the show, how there are so many things hidden inside of comic books. There's big social issues that often they resonate because of what's going on. In particular, I was naming how Superman was created in the 30s kind of as a response to fascism, and zombies in the 70s as a response to consumerism and all of those things. And what resonates, it often is reflected back to us whether we realize it or not.
Right. So a lot of times you're seeing something happening in the public and you're kind of, you know, you're thinking about it one way or not thinking about it at all, but it'd be someone who's a comic creator who's looking at it and has something to say about that particular thing. And we've watched comics go from the golden age of things being rather simple and you can make a statement about the world or politics or whatever in one easy, broad way, to the silver age where we wanted to sort of like, now we need to talk about societal ills that are happening to us, not just over in Europe, right? We got to talk about, you know, drug abuse. We got to talk about like racial politics. We have to talk about like all these other social issues came into comics like in the 70s in kind of a big sort of way. In the 80s, we have what I would refer to as like kind of the postmodern era of comics, where now suddenly there have been enough things happening in comics and in the world that now we can have comics examining comics.
Right.
Like now comics, we had our Superman, we had our Batman, we had our Wonder Woman. Now we have to explore and question why we liked and needed these things. Right. So suddenly that's like when comics became not fun. Right. Now, all of a sudden, angry people, mean people were writing comics and having to dissect them. And then they kind of like made things a little less fun. But they made a lot of great comics while doing it.
Sure. Right? Sure.
And then we get around to now where thankfully the industry is so full of such great independent talent. You can have, the comics are about everything now, right? I get people who still walk into my shop and they go, I stopped collecting comics in 1983 and I just assumed they stopped making them.
Because you know? The world is on my schedule.
That's pretty much what people, there are a lot of people who think that. A lot of people think that they stopped making comics and instead they started making TV shows about superheroes and movies about superheroes, right? So now a lot of what people think the characters really are like is developed by movies.
Right.
Right. Like the history of the character is what was in your little boxes in your room that your mom might have thrown away. But when you see them on the screen, now they're back. Mm-hmm. Right. Which is, you know, for publishing of comics, not quite true. But this is a thing that now is the comics publishing industry running up against the pop cultural sort of new knowledge about like what characters are like.
Yeah. Well, a little bit later in the program, we're going to be talking in the second hour after 8 o'clock, we're going to be talking with some creators who are doing this work, which I think will be really interesting. Kelly Sue DeConnick, Matt Fraction, and then later Gordon McAlpin, who works in the webcomic medium in particular. So we'll be, you know, talking with the three of them about their work. And what I'm really curious to ask Kelly Sue DeConnick and Matt Fraction about is that balance of working with a big, big publisher like Marvel, but then also this creator-owned smaller projects that are just as impactful, even if they have a much smaller budget, which I think is a really interesting time in publishing.
I know a lot of people who only know Matt Fraction from his work with Image Comics and had no idea he ever worked at Marvel. And I know a lot of people who know Kelly Sue from one particular comic Kelly Sue did, like for Marvel, and they're kind of asking themselves, what happened? Why isn't that the most popular, like, female superhero in the world right now? Because for a while, it really was the center of like kind of a resurgence of like women and girls kind of showing up and like being visible in comics in comics fandom.
Yeah. Yeah. I think something happened. And I can't really pinpoint it. I often blame the Powerpuff Girls cartoon, but something happened kind of in the late 90s, early aughts that made that kind of, I don't know, it made it this very dainty and palpable kind of because their catchphrase was girl power. It was all that. Like, I think something happened to female fandom right in that time where it was a little more acceptable or easier to process or something like that by male fans. I don't know what it was, but it seemed like it got a little dainty for a little while. But it feels anyway like it has come back in a very powerful and serious way.
I think I get the Powerpuff Girls thing, like the kind of the way where that kind of slots in. But for the people that I know that I like, you know, friends with and that I've had as customers, they will almost always also tell you that when that happened, they thought it was a super Powerpuff Girls tackled some topics that you wouldn't have expected for a show that looked like that. But those same the fans that it generated had come about it through books like Sandman and the X-Men. Right. Okay. So they kind of they had a slight introduction already in the comics for one really super long running series.
Yeah.
That was a soap opera. Right. And they had an introduction through, like, you know, British comic writers showing up and just kind of not doing superheroes at all and just kind of giving them something moody and deep. And then they got the Powerpuff Girls. Right. Mm-hmm. The Powerpuff Girls brought the bright colors back, and you could see the, like, you know, Blossom and Buttercup punching, you know, Mojo Jojo straight through buildings, which is very cool. Right. Like, right. But they come at it already having ingested, like, so much comics, some physical comics media, while not really being allowed in the comic shops. Right. Mm-hmm. By the time Powerpuff Girls happened, they were like, oh, wait. And this is cool.
Right.
Right. It did bring, you know, because they were cute little girls.
Yeah.
But they were cute little girls who wrecked the city every episode.
could stomp with might and fury. Right. Right. Indeed. Indeed. I feel like, too, there was sort of the narrative anyway about women going into a comic book shop where it was always like, oh, the Buffy comics are back there, ladies. You know,
that was a period. Yeah. Early, like, I guess the early 2000s. Yeah. It was, if you walked into the comic shop and you were looking for comics, they assumed you wanted Buffy. And before that, if you walked into a comic shop, they assumed you were looking for your boyfriend.
Right.
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 If you, like, I get stories all the time, but, like, you know, I hear people tell me, like, yeah, in the comic shop in my small hometown, you know, I had to go from shop to shop to find a place where it was okay for me to stand here and read, like, Hellblazer, right? Or, like,
right.
You know, something that, like, a Swamp Thing, anything,
yeah.
Where people would just kind of be, the shops were just so used to being these, like, you know, 15-year-old boys' bedrooms,
right.
That they weren't used to there being any women who would want to be there at all. Unless you had a comic shop near an art school.
Yeah.
You know, it
right.
Was just something that never happened.
Right.
You know?
Right. It was always I've had that happen. I've walked into a comic shop and been directed to the Buffy. And I was
right.
Like, I ain't here for Buffy. And it was, oh, well, you must need some graphic novels.
Right,
it was
right.
Just impossible that I would be there to just hang out and read and
right,
look at comics. Indeed. See, this is what happens on the show. We pick a topic, and as soon as we start unpacking it a little bit, we realize there's a lot to it. It's very nuanced, and there's almost always this bigger social implication. We're talking all about comics tonight, as you might have guessed, and we have our good friend Terry Gant, owner of Third Coast Comics here in Chicago. It's up in the Edgewater neighborhood. I highly recommend it. Best shop in the city. Super cool. Lots of cool events. Definitely go up there. Connect on social media. Anyway, Terry is hanging out with us all night in studio as we tackle this not so simple topic of comics. We're going to take a little break and come right back in just a bit on 720 WGN.
Spider-Man, does whatever a spider can. Spins a web any size, catches thieves just like flies. Look out, here comes a Spider-Man. Is he strong?
720 WGN. It's Amy Guth here on the Saturday Night Special. And as that song suggests, we are talking all about comics tonight. Not just comic books, although we are talking quite a bit about comic books, but also the people who make them, how the work gets translated to screens, both large and small, and the places where we find those comic books. We are hanging out tonight. Our good friend, Terry Gant, who is owner of Third Coast Comics here in Chicago, is with us in studio tonight. I have often called you the walking human encyclopedia for comics knowledge. Probably 10 years ago, maybe. I've known you such a long time, Terry. Saw you give a talk about, I think you called it More Than Capes and Tights.
Right.
And it was the full history of the industry, the icons within it, both creators and characters. And it was a really phenomenal talk. So there was no way I was going to do a show about comics tonight without having you here with us, because you bring such knowledge on the topic.
Oh, right. Thank you.
There you go. So your shop, I want to talk about your shop a little bit, because you did change locations.
Right.
I've been saying Edgewater all night, but it's actually technically on that border of
right.
Kind of Edgewater and Rogers Park, I suppose.
Right. So I'm technically in Rogers Park now because I'm across Devon.
Okay.
Like, I was on Broadway before, and on Broadway, if you cross Devon, you're on Sheridan. So now I'm on Sheridan Road in what is called the Rogers Edge Business District.
Okay, right? That's a new thing.
It is. It is a very new thing. I've been in my current location for about a year and a couple of months now, mm-hmm. Right? And I love it. It's great. I'm right on Loyola University's campus itself on Sheridan Road. I'm just right down the street, like, you know, all of, you know, 75 feet from the Loyola Red Line stop, you know, a bus stops right out front. There's always good, like, street traffic out front.
So there's no excuse. There's no way to not get there.
My store is in a dorm, you know? This is great. This is hilarious. There was one time that right when we first moved, I was like, I've just moved my shop. This is really scary. Oh, man, what's it going to be like here? And then some kid came down the elevator in her pajamas and, like, no shoes, bought a $25 graphic novel, paid for it with a credit card, and went right, got on the elevator and went right back upstairs. And I was like, oh, this is awesome.
You're like, it's okay, going to be done. Okay. It's going to be okay here in this dorm.
This works.
Yeah.
And I kind of like that, like, the Rogers Ed situation is such that if you know the far north side of Chicago, it's a lot of it's really known for the food you can find up there,
yeah,
but not for a lot of, like, the local retail. Right. And I'm kind of like right in what I love to call, like, downtown Rogers Edge. Right. It's that area where there's just so much going on right now and so much new development coming.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great for the area because you don't just need to. Now it's not really so much of a flyover situation. Right. At least it's becoming something really cool. There are people, the Edgewater Chamber of Commerce and the Rogers Park Business Alliance and Lakeshore Community Partners. They are all coming together to kind of, like, try to do something that is exciting for the residents who live there, right? That drives those people to take pride in some of what's going on in your own neighborhood in a way that's already happening, but you don't have to feel like you need to stay away from Devon as if it's like a no man's land,
yeah,
or Sheridan Road or Broadway as if there's just nothing there for you. There is, right? It's always been there, and the people in the neighborhood seem to be responding pretty well to it.
Sure.
So I'm pretty happy about it. I'm glad to be a part of it.
Yeah. Well, something that I think is really special about your shop from the start is the claim that you make that you've always been able to back up. That is, if you have a 5-minute conversation with someone, you can pick out a perfect stack of comics for them.
Right.
I've taken you up on that many times myself, and I have many cool things on my bookshelf to show for that. And I think that speaks to the community that you've been able to build, both online and offline, around your shop. And I think part of that is that you have done such a good job of representing independent artists, local artists, a wide variety of voices, where I think a lot of people think about this industry as being really dominated by kind of a younger white male voice. Like, there's really
or
something
an older bearded chubby white male voice,
the comic guy from Simpsons,
sure,
like there, that classic guy
done
right.
More damage, right? But but that is really what people think,
yeah,
you know, that's totally what people think. But, like, growing up reading comics and collecting them, you know, since, like, the mid-70s, it was always a thing where I was that little black kid that would walk into a comic shop once I found one and everything would stop because what's that kid here for, right?
Mm.
I'm just here to buy comics like everybody else, you know? And I never stopped reading them. And my friends, most of them reading them with me, were just like me,
mm-hmm,
right? So what do you do when you grow up and you're just thinking to yourself, it seems like if women keep getting directed to Buffy and all the brothers who come in keep, you know, we must be looking for Black Panther, right? But then here we are walking out of here with Heavy Metal. We're walking out with Sandman or Preacher, or, you know, we're getting into some things that are independent comics. We're doing, like, Usagi Yojimbo or Strangers, mm-hmm, in Paradise. Like, there's any number of things that we're trying here. My whole thing was always, I was always hunting for, like, you know, I wanted teams, super teams, more characters the better, because I only had so much money,
yeah,
right? So I would float all around the comic shop to find the books with as many characters in them as possible. So it meant I was going to be there a while doing this. Spider-Man never meant much to me because he was just one dude. And if all I had was, like, you know, $1.50, I can't blow a third of it on Spider-Man. I can't do that, right? So we get to a point where here we are now, we're grown, and I'm going into comic shops and I'm seeing the same sort of, like, othering that's happening out there. And I'm wondering to myself, like, okay, how do we, you know, I keep meeting these people who want to read comics. And when I was an online store, they were buying from me and I was delivering to them because they just felt like whenever they went into a local shop, they weren't welcome or they weren't shown towards something that they might love. Mm-hmm. Nobody was really taking the time to say to them, what are you into?
Yeah.
I bet we have it. You
right.
know what I mean? It was instead assumed you're here to buy the hot thing because that's what we sell. We sell the hot thing,
mm-hmm,
right? Well, the reason people don't think comics are for them is because they've been told comics weren't for them, you know? But then they sit and watch, they binge Netflix for 2 weeks,
yeah,
right? Well, what are you watching on Netflix? Whatever you're watching on Netflix exists in comics form already, right? What did you read at your last book club? You know, what are the books that you had to do in college that you actually enjoy and that you're kind of still following those along now? Like, if you didn't enjoy Lord of the Flies, don't read a Lord of the Flies comic, right? But if you did enjoy Lord of the Flies and you want something like that, something that, I mean, I don't know why you want Island Dystopia, but like it exists. It's sure. out there. Right. So let me have a 5-minute conversation with somebody and, you know, figure it out for them, you know, and more than likely they'll be back.
Oh, you know? For sure.
Yeah, they'll be back.
And I think there's such an interesting mix in your shop with, you know, these very heavy, beautifully bound, you know, long form graphic novels, but then also some, you know, mass, you know, big brand Marvel, DC comics, then some kind of hand sewn local right. pretty art. I mean, you can get a lot of stuff that resonates with you because you, I think in your shop, you've done such a good job of having that, not only a shop that a lot of people are welcome in, but a lot of voices are represented on your shelves.
Yeah. I'm still amazed at the creativity that like local independent like graphic novel and comics makers are able to pull off, because I grew up where the only independents were like, you know, Kamiko and First Comics, and you know, they for the most part, while they were independent, they kind of were following the mode of Marvel and DC Comics, mm-hmm. right? There wasn't a lot of people then who were doing kind of what Lucy Nisley or Sarah Beacon did. You know, there was no one doing kind of like, even, I mean, the Hernandez brothers were around, but there was no one like making that sort of a comic on their living room table, right? And then folding it over and then sewing the bindings together and then, like, you know, literally walking it around. There wasn't so much of that when I was growing up in the 80s getting really into comics. But now you can make comics. People are making comics out of almost anything.
Yeah.
I've seen, like, when cake comes around, there's people who just use stampers. You know, I've seen comics where folks are trying to tell some kind of narrative story with just geometric shapes and colors.
Right. Well, and I think it's interesting now, too, to look at how people have used social media platforms, particularly Snapchat and Instagram, especially Instagram. There are accounts just devoted to every day there's a new piece of a story updated of a hand drawn and then it's photographed kind of thing, which is so fascinating. And what an interesting distribution model. I feel like zine culture kind of picked up that independent artist, and those two things merged as people were making, you know, as the handmade part of zine culture and the independent comics collided, and their styles and resources and distribution styles collided. But then to take that a step further, suddenly like even Instagram or Snap on Snapchat pushes that even further in really cool and interesting ways.
Right. And now it doesn't matter. You can make a comic about anything out of nearly anything and sell it to anyone. There's someone, if you want to make a comic or a zine about talking trees, right?
I'm sure there's five out there already.
Right. And somebody in Canada is posting it to their Instagram and they've got a bunch of people waiting for a t-shirt that they did a Kickstarter for.
Right.
Right. You know, like I have a friend who reads a comic that we were referring to. She's in love with this comic and a bunch of their friends are also in love with this comic. And it's about hockey.
Okay.
And they call it, well, they refer to it as Hockey Comic, and I'm calling it Hockey Comic because for the longest time, I didn't know the name of it, because whenever my friends would ever use the name, I thought it was about restaurants, and the comic was called Check Please.
Oh.
Right? So I thought they're referring to a comic about restaurants that apparently they're really into, but they're going crazy about Hockey Comic, and I thought they were two different things.
I see.
And then I realized, oh, wait, no, Hockey Comic is Check Please, and it's a web comic, and it has a huge following, and you know, there was merch,
there's like, stuff, there's t-shirts and bags and all kind of stuff.
Like, who stuff for a web comic? This was new to me.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
from the way that I came up, you know, experiencing
sure.
comics.
Sure, I think it's an exciting time given that the social tools and digital tools available allow anyone to participate that would like to. It's an interesting time. So tonight we are talking all about comics and the industry, the icons both in the industry and drawn in, the characters, the iconic characters of the industry. So we are going to take a little break, get you the news, all that good stuff. When we come back, we are talking with some people who create those very works. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN.
I'm telling you.
720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Saturday Night Special. And as ever, we pick one topic and we talk all about it, many, many different aspects of it. Tonight, that topic is comics. We've been talking about their cultural significance, how they reflect a lot of social issues back to us. And as promised here in the second hour, we are talking with creators of that work. Right now, we have joining us by phone Kelly Sue DeConnick and Matt Fraction, Eisner-winning power couple, both writers of many works that you have seen. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I'm thrilled to be back on WGN legally after having masterminded the Max Headroom broadcast signal intrusion in 1987 when I was 11 years old. So this is cool to be on the legal way.
Excellent. Well, we welcome you back completely. Well, I'm so excited to have you with us tonight. Big fan of the work that you both do. And I even have special management permission tonight, Kelly, Sue.
Sorry to make that necessary.
No, I was thrilled to do this because I'm a very big fan of your work titled Bitch Planet. And I'm so excited. It's the first time I've ever been able to say that word on the radio, but I have explicit management permission to say it tonight. So thank you for that.
You're very welcome.
Now, our children have permission from management to say it as well.
I imagine so. And we have Terry Gant in studio with us also for this conversation. He is the owner of Third Coast Comics right here in Chicago. And so my first question to you, Kelly Sue and Matt, is because you're both writers, you both have done so much work. And what is it about the comic medium in particular? Why is it such a relevant and important medium that has drawn you both to it?
Well, I think one of the most appealing things about it to me is nothing is more responsive. There's a cheapness to it. You know, it's inexpensive to make a comic, and it's relatively easy to distribute, and they can be produced in. It takes about 3 or 4 months really from announcement to when they're on the racks. And there's nothing, you can't make a TV show in that amount of time. You can't make a film in that amount of time or for that amount out of money. The only thing that's more responsive than us is really the web. So
pretty much,
we're a very quick moving medium, and because of that, I think we can take a lot more chances because we're not expensive. It's very freeing because it's cheap and fast.
Mm-hmm. Matt, anything you would add to that?
I like what happens when you combine words and pictures together. There's something innate in the medium itself where these strands of information all kind of braid together and they're left to a reader, to parse. There's nothing else quite like it. There's comics borrow from a lot of other industries and a lot of other medium, a lot of other art forms, but there's nothing quite like what happens, on a page of comics.
No doubt. Well, so you've both done work for Marvel, such a large brand, but then you've also both done more creator-owned work. Kelly Sue through Bitch Planet and Pretty Deadly, and then Matt through Sex Criminals. And I wonder if you could compare kind of those two experiences, both working for such a large brand and then the creator-owned experience too.
Matt, you want to take that one first?
You get to play with, like, the coolest toys in the toy box. I grew up reading these comics, and then I got to write some of them. That's pretty great, It is a big, interactive, storied narrative tapestry full of some of the most recognizable icons in Western pop culture anyway. And to get to carry the baton a little while is pretty great. If I could go back and tell 11-year-old me, like, mm-hmm. Hey, you get to write this one day, I wouldn't have believed it. But then pride of ownership on your own stuff is also incredibly real and incredibly valuable, and it feels good. And you're allowed mean something when you're producing original work.
Yeah, I think the Marvel's the longest running continuous narrative in human history, which is a sort of shocking thing to say out loud. And I think it's a tremendous honor to have been able to have sewn on that quilt for a little while. But at the same time, to have something that you own, that you built from the ground up with a collaborator that you responsible for, there's no, you know, corporate overseer or anything, that there's an itch to do that as well. Matt will sometimes liken it to anaerobic versus workouts. You know, like you got to do both.
Right.
There are appealing things to doing both, and it's wise to balance a career with some of work for hire and some creator owned.
Sure. And both the work.
Also, step on that too, but there's also just things that, like one's a car, one's a boat, right? One is great for roads, one is terrible on the water. Right. There are all kinds of things you can do with Thor and Iron Man. And it's a lot of fun and it's awesome and it's great and it's entertaining. And then there are things that you can do with Thor and Iron Man that are just kind of wildly inappropriate. Like, yes, you can do them. Comics are a versatile medium and these characters are immortal. They'll live forever. But like, hey, maybe this is not the place. Like, you know, you want to tell a story about global warming, maybe Thor isn't the place to do it necessarily. Although, you know, like it's a sort of, oh, I want to talk about this thing that Iron Man, it would be weird coming out of Iron Man's mouth, you know?
Yeah. So looking at your individual work in particular, I want to start with Kelly Sue, with your work in Bitch Planet. Vanity Fair wrote a couple of years ago about, and it really credited you with drawing women back into comics. And we've been talking a lot on the show this first hour about how it's kind of, women have always been around, just have had different hurdles. In your mind, do you think, you know, what, how did you feel when Vanity Fair gave you that crown?
Well, I don't know that that's incredibly accurate. I think there were a lot of reasons that women, and again, as you say, and I feel like we can't underscore this enough, women have always read comics. You know, and we have a very short cultural memory with this idea that somehow comics are this very masculine thing and women are interlopers. And there's so many problems with that idea.
Yeah.
Beginning with the fact that it is a very short memory of the history of our industry. You know, there was fairly recently, because of some targeted marketing that was happening in the 80s and 90s, there was a drop off in female readership of comics. It had to do with a kind of perfect storm of things, with comics being used to sell toys, targeted marketing emphasizing toys intended for boys, the rise of the direct market, where comics went from public spaces into private spaces, where you had to actually find a comic book store and kind of overcome those hurdles. There were a lot of reasons why there was a drop-off. And then there was a number of things, I think, that brought women back. I would say probably the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Mm-hmm. The success of those films had a lot to do with it. I would also say rise of digital comics, which enables people to start reading comics without having to overcome those hurdles of going into a store and finding a guide and getting someone who can explain to you, well, in any other bookstore, we shelve by genre. Here, we shelve by publisher. And, you know, if you want to start reading, say you went to go see the movie Avengers and you really liked Black Widow and you want to kind of find a Black Widow comic, it's hard to navigate that on your own. You do kind of need a guide. And the digital comics allowed people to
avoid any anxiety that they had about going into a comic store, and then pairing that with Wikipedia or some of the comics communities online, they could find guides to find their way in, and they and without having to go where they felt unwelcome.
Right. So, well, when we look at your work in Bitch Planet, there it's been going for a few years now, and it's this universe in which women who are categorized as non-compliant are kind of shipped off to their own place. Do you feel in the last, say, 6 months in the current political climate, when we're having much bolder conversations than we were perhaps a year ago, or more urgent ones anyway, do you feel, are you perhaps approaching that differently or thinking about that work differently than you were a year ago?
I'm sure I am. I've tried not to to change plans I had for plotting of the book or where we were going. I've tried not to be hijacked by the news in that regard, and to try to still make sure that our plot rises from our characters and it's all coming from a very genuine place. But the book is also a satire, and it is innately political, and it's very hard to not be. Right. If I wasn't satirizing the current political elements, I don't know what exactly I would be writing about. I wish the book were not so relevant today. I think when I started, it was it was much more ludicrous. Yeah. We've always described it as mean funny, but the mean stings a little bit more right now.
Yeah.
And
that's a good way to put that. I like that.
Yeah.
Is it also possible that Kelly Sue, and even for you, Matt, is it also possible that the difference between working for like a big company like Marvel and working and doing your own stuff for, say, Image or Dark Horse or somebody like that, is if something is happening that is current in pop culture or in the political universe for Americans, and you want to address it, you can now add something without really, without a lot of like hand wringing over it. You can just get it done. And then now, while your situation is kind of taking a slight turn, if the Hulk all of a sudden starts talking about, you know, global warming, it would be weird given what might be 2 years of planning for the Hulk, right? You know, is
right,
that,
right.
Like that's a thing that you can now do. You're directly, it's not that you didn't just create it. You're constantly involved. You're driving that car.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And, you know, and it's not even like somebody at Marvel would say the Hulk would never talk about global warming again, just as like the weirdest example. but it's just like Jurassic Park, man, just because you can, should you? You know, like right. I can put these words in Hulk's mouth, or I could do a whole story, whole cloth that doesn't have a, you know, big gamma monster in it, and doesn't need fight scenes to kind of work to do it. It's just sort of a question of you can take a car into the water, but a boat will serve you much better in the long run.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, and there was a certain, like, I'm in part, Bitch Planet was a reaction to some element of reception that I got on Captain Marvel, where, you know, there were certain areas of the internet that were angry as what they perceived as a hijacking of the character for my own nefarious feminist agenda. And really what happened was, you know, I went back
you put her in pants.
Well, no, I read I read where Carol Danvers came from, and, you know, her Jerry Conway's Ms. Marvel number one is overtly feminist. It was always there in the character. It was something that she had gotten away from, and I brought it back in the same way that I brought back references to Mar-Vell in her costume, right? Like, it was ridiculous that it was really just trying to sort of guide her back to a place where she could have more swagger, because I wanted people to be able to cheer for her. I wasn't particularly trying to get my agenda across any more than we can have another conversation about how I think superheroes are innately feminist. But anyway, Bitch Planet came a little bit out of like, oh, that was not angry feminist. If you want to see angry feminist, I will show it you.
I got your angry feminist right here. Right.
Yes.
Right. Well, and so since you mentioned Captain Marvel, that movie that is coming mm-hmm. up, the eagerly anticipated, much discussed film, how is that looking? How are you feeling about it? All of those things.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I believe in the Marvel machine. They've done really well in the way that they've handled the cinematic universe. Kevin Feige is a very smart man who hires incredibly talented people and then lets them do their thing. We just went to see Guardians of the Galaxy 2. And when Matt and I saw Guardians of the Galaxy 1, I remember sitting in there, and it's so... Those films don't apologize for being comic books. It's the thing I love about them. You know, I think some of the other comic book films that I've seen seem to be trying to distance themselves from their source material as though it's shameful. Right. And the Guardians of the Galaxy movies in particular really embrace, oh no, we're a comic book. Mm-hmm. When the full screen logo popped up, I laughed out loud with joy. It was so much fun. And then there was a point at which there was just some deep nerd continuity in there. And I turned to Matt and was like, this shouldn't work. It absolutely shouldn't work by all the rules that we've been taught of what can be done in film and how, you know, what people will tolerate of comics and film. It shouldn't work. And it absolutely did. And it was glorious. It just delightful and fun. And you know, the Guardians and the Avengers, they both sort of have this inherent lesson that there is nothing as powerful as when we get together.
Yeah.
And when we can overcome our differences and work together, we can defeat anything. And like, I don't know how you argue with that right now. We need that right now more than ever.
Indeed. Hear, hear. Matt, I want to shift to you a little bit because I do want to talk about your work in Sex Criminals, which is, I loved an interview you did, I think it was at Nerdist maybe a while back, about how now forever that term is going to be associated with you on the internet. Probably,
yeah, great.
Unfortunately.
Real smart. Well, like, when I wrote Iron Man, I know I got on, like, watch lists because you talk about writing about contemporary stuff. I was doing a lot of research into contemporary terrorism. Mm-hmm. So I Googled stuff you just should never Google, like, just like, oh, I'm going to be on a list now. And if I'm not on a list, we're all going to die.
Right.
But yeah, so now between Googling, like, what dams can I blow up in China? And, you know, Sex Criminals, it's amazing anytime I can get on an airplane, honestly.
Right. Well, so that work in Sex Criminals is so interesting. It's I think if someone's coming to it uninitiated, they don't realize that at first that it is quite funny, and it's done so tenderly, really this very frank look at sex and relationships in an unflinching but tender and kind of sweet way. What drove you to that particular topic and that storytelling spot?
Well, the sort of the line is like we've tricked everyone into reading a book about hardcore romance. It's a love story, you know, it's a love story with dirty words, and it's a book about sex that isn't sexy. Mm-hmm. It's a book with dirty jokes that isn't dirty. And it's sort of, it exists in the space between a single and a double entendre. It's like a half entendre.
Right.
That's just kind of where that awkwardness and that it's crispy and chewy, you know, kind of place. I wanted to do something funny, and I wanted to do a love story, and I wanted to work with Chip, and I wanted to make Chip laugh. And comics are a lot of work, or it's a lot of work to do these things. And if you're just doing dirty jokes, it gets old real fast.
Yeah.
So if if we were going to do this dance, then we had to, you know, we had to do it in a way that we could stomach doing it for the long run.
And that's another thing that I'm veering a little bit, but that's a thing that we didn't talk about in talking about comics is incredibly important, in particularly in the way that we work. I mean, it's not a rule across the board. There are people who write and draw, but comics are a collaborative art for us. And so, you know, Valentine is absolutely 50% at least of the creation of of Bitch Planet, and that and Chip and Matt together. I mean, that book is so much about them playing off of each other and trying to entertain one another. It's
I mean, there came a point on Hawkeye where David and I stopped. It was just sort of by Matt and David, and now Sex Criminals is also by Matt and Chip, you know. It's just that kind of, the only people that can say whose part was what is me and him, you know?
Right, right. I mean, I think that's what's so very...
But I did all the good parts.
Of course, of course. Who could argue with that? Well, I think that's what's so special about this particular medium. It's this literary genre that is so purely collaborative between the visual and the written, that is so lovely and so beautiful. Well,
And it exists in a place, too, where we can... I think when writers get to a point in their craft where they're confident enough, not just in their own abilities, but when you develop real and genuine trust for a creative partner, not an employee, but like a real collaborator, it's a constant back and forth and making each other better. Mm. I two-thirds of my scripts nobody but Chip ever reads, and I always rewrite based on the work that comes back, you know, because it's so surprising, and Chip has made it better, so I can make it better. You know, there's this constant. I adjust because my collaborators are so talented, right. My partners are so gifted, and I want to take all the credit.
A sign of a wonderful partnership.
I take all the credit for the good stuff.
Isn't it also sort of like a thing where you work with the creator long enough that your job should technically actually become easier? There's things as a writer you don't have to put in writing because your artist knows how to set something up. You know what I mean? Like there's a way when you start working with someone, a lot of writers are scripting everything because you want to make sure you get what you need on a page. And at a certain point, your artist knows what you need on a page, and you just kind of, you can step back a little bit and let him do it. You know?
Yeah. You know, like after I did 60 some issues of Iron Man with Salvador LaRocca, and there got to a point where it just became telegrammatic, you know. There was a telepathy between the two of us where I knew how to write what I needed to write to get him to draw what he was best at. And, you know, like it was just sort of, yeah, it becomes it's a partnership.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Unfortunately, we are out of time, but I wish we could have hours. There's so many things I want to ask you about, so many other things. But thank you both so much, Kelly Sue DeConnick and Matt Fraction.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks, you. Guys. I hope you will join us another time. You are always welcome on the show.
Thank you.
Go Cubs.
Thanks. There you go. Thanks so much. You guys have a wonderful evening and a great weekend.
Thank you. You too.
All right, we're going to take a little break and get you to news and all that good stuff back in just a bit on 720 WGN. And 20 WGN. It's Amy Guth here on the Saturday Night Special. We have been talking all about the topic of comics tonight on the heels of the release of the new Wonder Woman film. That is a topic a lot of people are talking about. And so we've been talking about that. We have our good friend Terry Gant in studio with us tonight. He is the owner of Third Coast Comics. Up in, what did you call it? It's not Edgewater. It's not Rogers Park. What is it?
Rogers Edge.
Rogers Edge. That sounds way more dangerous and tough and worldly than all that. It is a really cool shop. Again, it's called Third Coast Comics. Connect with them on social media and definitely go by the shop if you are in that area. So in this second hour, we've been talking with creators who are doing this work. We were just talking with Kelly Sue DeConnick and Matt Fraction about their work and all of the things that they do. Really, really interesting conversation there. And as we look to the way that comics have expanded into other platforms, other mediums, and taken on different forms and met readers where they are, we have to look at the webcomic, because that is a really fascinating way that digital media has come into play. So we're joined now by Gordon McAlpin. He is the creator of Multiplex. He is on the phone with us from Wizard World Philadelphia. If you are there, he is in booth 1702. He's promoting the third book in the Multiplex series. It is called Multiplex The Revenge. It officially comes out on June the 14th. And you know what? I'm lucky enough to be working with Gordon on his new animated short film based on the series that's coming out a little bit later this year. Welcome to the program, Gordon. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, Gordon.
Yeah.
How's it going, Terry?
You guys know each other, right?
Yeah.
Of course you do. Yeah. Of course you do.
I was a frequent customer of Third Coast. It's a great shop.
Indeed. We all are frequent customers, indeed. So how is everything going there? It was a real Philadelphia. You've got the booth. You've got, you're talking about the third book. You're doing all the things. How is it up there?
Yeah. It's great. The weather's nice. Attendance is pretty good. I hear last year was boo-boo. I wasn't here last year, so I don't know. But I'm doing good. It's fun meeting fans. It's fun making new readers. That kind of thing. So
for sure. So tell us about Multiplex as a series and why you chose that digital medium and kind of how that has kind of the opportunities and challenges with it that come with being on a digital platform as opposed to one printed in a more traditional way.
Well, I started Multiplex 12 years ago. I originally thought it was going to be a backup feature for a webcomic that I'd been doing. I did it for Bookslot.com at first. I decided to take it to its own website for a variety of reasons. And Bookslot was like 8 to 12 page nonfiction comics adapting an author's appearance into a comic. So I did Neil Gaiman, I did one on Marjane Satrapi, and those took a long time to do. So in order to kind of build an audience, I wanted to put something up on the website, the Stripped Books website, that would update more regularly. So I was like, okay, I'll do like a gag strip. And I kind of dusted off this old idea that I wanted to do as an animated short, animation at the time. And I came up with Multiplex, and I am probably the only person on the planet that would have thought that the joke strip about two guys talking trash about movies was going to be less popular than the one where authors talk about their books. But that's just my sensibility, I guess.
Right.
So I started Multiplex, and it kind of quickly took on a life of its own. It kind of outgrew the joke a day, joke a week, really, sort of format. But one of the things I really liked about doing Multiplex on the web was that I could literally draw a strip. I could watch a movie, since it's a movie comic. I could write and draw the comic and then post it the same day. You couldn't do that anywhere else other than web comics. You know, the Doonesbury has a lead time of a couple of weeks, and that's one of the fastest turnarounds for any newspaper strip. I'm sure maybe there's some weeklies that work a little faster, but for the most part, you know, that's only possible on the web. That immediacy of publishing, the flexibility of formatting too. I could change the length of the strip anytime I wanted. I could do color without having to worry about printing costs, although now I sort of regret that because my books are expensive to print.
Sure.
Yeah.
But that's.
And well, what I love about Multiplex, it's although it is about these employees of this movie theater and their very strong opinions about not just the films being shown, but you know, things happening in their lives and all the stuff. It's so relatable, even if you've never worked in a movie theater, if you've ever worked in retail or food service or anything like that, you're like, oh man, I had that customer. Oh man, I had that coworker. You know, it's kind of a little more universal workplace kind of thing. So what is the role that social media has played for you because you're able to post so quickly? And I assume then you probably get feedback pretty immediately too then.
I used to. I used to have comments on the website. When the strip ran, it ended in April, actually. I still had Facebook comments. They were separate from the website. But when I had them on the website itself, it kind of bothered me because sometimes people take that kind of immediacy of feedback to saying that they have to comment. So if they don't get a joke, even if it's because they just didn't read it carefully enough or whatever, they have to tell me that. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, when you read a comic strip online, people aren't very quick to think that they just didn't get something, or that maybe they're just not going to get something because it requires, you know, some prior knowledge that, you know, they just don't know about. Like a movie that they're not familiar with or whatever, they blame the creator.
Oh, like, sure. Oh, it's because you're wrong.
Terrible. This joke is terrible because I've never heard of this movie before.
Right.
And I'm like, well, you know, if you've heard of that movie, that joke is hilarious.
Right.
And also, sometimes it's not like you're if you're writing a strip about a movie that you just watched, so you
right.
yourself might not have let that marinate a bit, but you need that hot take so that you can get that your thoughts down. And now fans who probably also just saw it or haven't seen it or commenting on something you've just done, right?
So right.
now you have to deal with twitchy fans reacting to something that's your emotional situation, right?
Right.
But giving nothing any thought whatsoever, you know, and it's the internet. Right. You know the internet, you know,
mm-hmm.
humans ruin everything.
Yeah. I love that. That's the quote of the night. Well, you know what? I have to think here as you're talking about this. I'm sort of comparing it to something I've said a lot about journalism, and that is I don't really care the medium that people are using to receive the news as long as they're consuming it. I don't care if it's on a page or a screen or whatever, or they're listening to it,
right.
as long as they're in fact consuming it. And so I wonder, you know, regardless of whether it's a webcomic or a printed one, to you, why is this particular medium so resonant? Why is it? Because it is a special one. It sort of sits there between the visual and the written literary word, and it's a very unique style of storytelling. So why comics for you? What drew you to it?
I always like telling stories with pictures. So film and comics both kind of have equal ground with me. But comics are something you can do on your own in your room without leaving the house. And so you can be a control freak and control every single aspect of the production, writing, drawing, lettering, the website it's on. You can control all of that. You can't do that with film unless maybe you're a solo animator.
Right.
And even then, you'd have to do all the voices or something. And, you know, to do animation, it takes months of work to do 10 minutes. Whereas in a comic, you know, once a week, I could do a page and hold down a day job. If I'm working full time, I could do a page a day. So you could do a lot more work a lot more quickly. The immediacy, again, is another thing that I really loved about webcomics in particular. And kind of growing an audience over the course of 12 years and letting my characters age over the course of those 12 years. Like, I've had readers who went to high school when they were first started reading Multiplex, and now they're, you know, well, one of them is my agent on a book I'm working on.
How funny.
So it's really weird.
Yeah. I wonder, too.
I had a life with these characters.
Yeah. Yeah. And so as you look forward, there's the film part that you're bringing into your portfolio of work.
Mm-hmm.
But as you're looking forward, just in the general, just kind of surveying the horizon of the work being done in the webcomics world, what is your hope for that future as we're seeing new digital tools and distribution methods appearing so quickly? What do you feel like it's pointing towards, and kind of what is your hope there?
Well, my hope is that people start making more money from digital publishing. I think there are, you know, platforms for releasing digital comics, but web comics in particular, there's just really no money in it. There are people making money off of like Comixology, which is kind of like downloadable ebooks. Marvel and DC do those as well. But like you're kind of buried by all of the really big name creators. So, you know, it'd be nice to see some alternative marketplaces that, you know, where they can highlight independent creators. I'd like to see some of this. So there's a lot of really good work that isn't necessarily going to appeal to the mass, you know, the really large mainstream audiences that love action comics and, and the kind of fantagraphics, very popular sort of indie comics style. That's one of the things about webcomics. Like, you don't need to have this really broad idea. You can really work those niche audiences mm-hmm. and still find an audience. And so the discoverability was a really crucial thing for Multiplex. Multiplex was never going to be read by millions of readers a day because you'd have to be kind of familiar with way too many movies and things like that. But strips like Girls with Slingshots are never going to be run in the newspaper because it's all about sex toys. And then you find webcomics is kind of this proving ground for a lot of really great new artists. Nimona is a really big as a webcomic, and it is now in print, things like that. So, it'd be nice to see people not leave digital comics for more money. It's always depressing when even in mainstream publishing, when you have somebody who's doing really great work, and then all of a sudden, even mainstream comics publishers can't really afford to pay them what their time is worth. And so they go off and they do storyboards for movies or character designs for movies. So, this is the weirdest hope for the future, but I just hope we get more readers.
Yeah.
Who value the medium and the work that's being created in it to support the creators and encourage more of that kind of work.
Maybe what's needed is a way that we can stop separating comics by the medium in which we ingest it, and instead just get people to take in comics however they can. I'm looking out a window right now, and I'm watching all these people walk back and forth who all have phones in their pockets, right? They've all got phones. They can all read a book. They've got 50 books in their pocket at any given time, or possibly they could, right? But if we see print comics as comics, and we see movies as movies, and we see web comics as web comics, instead of all of it being effectively comics, right? We've got this distinction going on that prevents, because a web comic is now only for those kids who like those things, instead of the same way I'm trying to put comics in people's hands, whether you know this is for you or not, right? The web comic audience can expand if we get people to stop thinking that it's for someone not named them. You know,
right.
Like we're wondering how we're going to make money at it, when the truth is there's all these people out there who are totally familiar with strips in the paper that they read every day. Mm-hmm. Right. So those things are syndicated and they're out there, and that's just viewed as some acceptable thing that people think of as accessible by them. But webcomic creators are still seen as outsiders, you know, when they've got the ability to digest this right there in their pockets all the time. So you just gotta, it's not that you have to work harder at reaching them. I think that we as the comics industry need to stop sort of segregating ourselves. You know, we've got these big conventions in which we celebrate our diversity and everything, but we, in terms of how we create and who we market to, we separate ourselves from those people.
That's an interesting point, Terry. Yeah. Well, I think there's your $1 million idea.
All right.
You guys, after the show, we're going to huddle and we're going to solve that. We're going to build that, whatever that is.
Right.
And that's going to be our, I don't know if it's going to be like Etsy plus Amazon of comics, but we're going to do that. And that's going to be our $1 billion idea.
Okay.
Gordon McAlpin, creator of Multiplex. You can find out more about it, multiplexcomic.com. Have fun there in Philadelphia at Wizard World. Again, he's at booth 1702. If you're there or headed there and you want to go pick up the third book in the Multiplex series, it's called Multiplex The Revenge. It officially comes out on June the 14th. So good to hear from you, Gordon.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks so much. Have fun in Philly.
Take it easy, Gordon.
See you, Terry.
All right, we're going to take a little break and we're going to wrap things up and then get you to news, all that good stuff in just a bit on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, I'm Amy Guth, and this has been the Saturday Night Special. And as ever, when we pick one topic that seems so straightforward, so simple, tonight's topic of comics, right here on the heels of the release of the Wonder Woman film, We think it's going to be really straightforward. We think of comics and comic books being one thing. But in fact, we have unpacked a lot of stuff tonight, as ever. It's always the case on this show. We come across ways in which our culture is reflected back to us, in the way our fears and hopes are all reflected back to us in this very unique genre where the literary word and the visual art come together for storytelling that I think is so powerful, so unique, and so very interesting. So thank you to all my guests tonight. Kelly Sue DeConnick, Matt Fraction, Gordon McAlpin, Katie Reif, and of course our in-studio guest who's been with us all night, Terry Gant, who is owner of Third Coast Comics in, I keep wanting to call it something else, but it's where Edgewater and Rogers Park come together.
Is Rogers Edge.
Rogers Edge. That's everybody head to Third Coast Comics. It's such a cool place.
64. No, man, my address, I'm totally blowing it right now.
It's fine. I'll tweet it out later. I'll tweet it out later and we'll be sure to put it on the WGN Radio website for sure. And you got a podcast.
643.
That's the one. And you have North a podcast. Sheridan. People should definitely go to your podcast.
Our podcast is Stakes is High, like the De La Soul album, Black Nerd Podcast.
There you go. Yeah. Everybody, it's an excellent podcast. Definitely, definitely listen to it. And speaking of podcasts, hit the wonderful podcast. It is all about films and filmmaking. It is by esteemed producer Tom Hush. It is called No Coast Cinema. You can find it at WGNradio.com and on the WGN Plus app.
Yeah, it's great.
It's great, he said so modestly.
I promise. It's great. But just in this decompression time, I actually, I've been a fan of Third Coast Comics for the longest time because I went to Loyola University. And when I found out there was a local comic book store, I freaked and I started going to Third Coast, and it meant so much to me in that time to know that there was a place where I could just go and hang out and read comics. And sometimes, or at least one time, I went to a chili cook-off in the freezing cold, and we ate chili and enjoyed a lovely evening. And as for another guest, Multiplex, Gordon McAlpin, I've read that webcomic from, I feel like, day one. And it was so great. It was so much fun to see that every week and every new issue. And now I actually work in a movie theater, and it has taken on a whole new meaning. Yeah, it's crazy. So shout out to Gordon McAlpin for really capturing the movie theater experience.
Yeah, for sure. Well, shout out to all of our guests tonight. Indeed, it is not such a straightforward topic, and there's lots of nuances to it. But what you need is you need a good partner in finding the comics that speak to you. I recommend Terry Gant. He is... You have always found great stuff for me. And as Tom mentioned, you do really fun events at your store. He went to a chili cook-off. I went to a speakeasy there. That was really fun. You tweeted a password at me. That was good.
I will try almost anything to make sure that the people get what they need. You know?
Well, and in all seriousness, that is one shop that the first time I walked into it, it wasn't like, oh, there's a girl in here. Right. It was like there is a human being who wants to read something and consume some kind of art or words or something, and let's find out what that is. And I've always really appreciated that very much about your shop.
Thank you very much.
And so thanks for being with us and hanging out with us tonight.
This is awesome.
Well, you're welcome back here anytime, of course. We always appreciate your knowledge here with us. So all the things that we mentioned tonight are going to be at WGNradio.com with the podcast. It will be up shortly. And, of course, if you follow me on social media, I will tweet it out and I'll post it on Facebook, all that good stuff, and all those fun things. So we will see you back here next week with another topic that we will dig into with lots and lots of experts. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. If you are an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio.